नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So, continuing with this concluding chapter, chapter 15 of the seventh canto of this unit 2 of the Bhaktivedanta course here in Melbourne, Mahaprabhu Mandir Temple. And we will start this class with the discussion beginning from text number 9. Because of awakening of spiritual knowledge, those who are intelligent in regard to sacrifice, who are actually aware of religious principles and who are free from material desires, control the self in the fire of spiritual knowledge or knowledge of the absolute truth. They may give up the process of ritualistic ceremonies. Purport. People are generally very much interested in karmakanda, ritualistic ceremonies for elevation to the higher planetary systems. But when one awakens his spiritual knowledge, he becomes uninterested in such elevation and engages himself fully in jnana yajna to find the objective of life. The objective of life is to stop completely the miseries of birth and death and return home back to Godhead. When one cultivates knowledge for this purpose, he is considered to be on a higher platform than one who is engaged in karma, yajna, or fruitive activities. Text 10. Upon seeing the person engaged in performing the sacrifice, animals meant to be sacrificed are extremely afraid, thinking, this merciless performer of sacrifices, being ignorant of the purpose of sacrifice, and being most satisfied by killing others, will surely kill us. Purport. Animal sacrifice in the name of religion is currently practically all over the world in every established religion. It is said that Lord Jesus Christ, when 12 years old, was shocked to see the Jews sacrificing birds and animals in the synagogues, and that he therefore rejected the Jewish system of religion and started the religious system of Christianity, adhering to the Old Testament commandment, thou shalt not kill. At the present day, however, not only are animals killed in the name of sacrifice, but the killing of animals has increased enormously because of the increased number of slaughterhouses. Slaughtering animals either for religion or for food is most abominable and is condemned herein. Unless one is merciless, one cannot sacrifice animals either in name or in religion for food. Text number 11. Therefore, day by day, one who is actually aware of religious principles and is not heinously envious of poor animals should happily perform daily sacrifices and those for certain occasions with whatever food is available easily by the grace of the Lord. So, beginning from verse number 9, we've heard here that people perform karmakanda, ritualistic ceremonies for elevation of the higher planets, but those who follow the jnana yajna, you know, their objective is to get out of the cycle of birth and return back to Godhead, and they're on a higher level, and they can give up some of the karmakanda practices. And then it's describing that apart from giving up karmakanda practices, you know, one should avoid, in the name of religion especially, animal sacrifices as and then it's suggesting that you know, one should perform religious principles without envy to other animals, and using whatever food is available by the grace of the Lord. So, and you know, so this is done by the Dharma Vid, those who know the actual purpose of the religion, which is stated by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita 1866, that becoming Krishna conscious is the topmost stage in understanding religious principles. And one who reaches this stage performs the archana process in devotional service. So, you know, this archana process is very interesting in that by doing that, all the various different religious principles and ceremonies can be done just through that archaman. Practically everything is done. There's almost nothing else needs to be done. It satisfies all the Vedic requirements very nicely. So that's another, last week we spoke about so many benefits and glories of archana. And here is another one. And the other thing underlying that, of course, is that there's no animal sacrifices in the archana process. And then Prabhupada says, anyone, whether a grihastha or a sannyasi, can keep small deities of the Lord suitably packed or, if possible, installed, and thus worship the deities of Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan, Lord Jagannath, or Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by offering food prepared in ghee and then offering the sanctified prasad to the forefathers, demigods, and other living entities as a matter of routine daily work. All the centres of our Krishna consciousness movement have deity worship programs very nicely going on which food is offered to the deity and distributed to the first class brahmanas and Vaishnavas and even to the people in general. This performance of sacrifice brings complete satisfaction. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement engage daily in such transcendental activities. Thus, in our Krishna consciousness movement, there is no question at all of killing animals. Now, of course, you know, you can see here in Srila Prabhupada's books, and many people will come to the movement and begin reading these books, and here you see there's a, you know, a strong encouragement by Srila Prabhupada for people, for everyone, anyone, to worship the deities of the Lord, including the deities of Radha Krishna. It's very, you know, he's just making it very much available. And he says, you know, can keep small deities of the Lord suitably packed, means that sometimes people may not have a permanent residence, in which case, you know, like they may have, you know, a little box or something that they carry the deities around and they unpack them when they're, you know, in a place where they're staying for that particular time, and or, you know, that they actually install them in their homes, which is, you know, like this. So, you know, Prabhupada is very, very liberally, you know, encouraging people to put the deities in their homes. And here, you know, what is the program? You know, he's not asking for everything to be made of gold and silver and, you know, the main thing, you offer food, and you accept that prasad, and where possible distribute that prasad, you know, offer it to senior devotees and brahmanas and to people in general. But also, as you see here, that prasad is also offered to the forefathers, you know, the demigods, other living entities. You know, there are different festive occasions and periods of, you know, offering food to the forefathers and what have you. And sometimes you see in the Krishna book where, you know, the Nanda Maharaj and others worship Lord Shiva, and Prabhupada says that, you know, occasionally, you know, the devotees worship Lord Shiva. It's an optional thing. They don't. It's not like part of their. They must do this every day, but sometimes these things come up that, yes, this year we will do that, you know. But the way we do it is that we see him as a Vaishnava, we offer prasad to Krishna, and then we offer him prasad. But also, sometimes, you know, we are dealing with people who, you know, the Durga or Shiva is their family deity, but they want a Hare Krishna devotee from ISKCON to come there and preside over that ceremony. In which case, we would do what Prabhupada, you know, we would, you know, put the Lord Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, we would offer the food, you know, to the Lord, and then offer that prasad to the deity and teach them how to do that. Otherwise, who's going to teach them? So, you know, it's summarizing a lot that we've been discussing within this class. So then we hear in text 12 there are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion or vidama. Religious principles for which one is unfit, that's paradharma, pretentious religion, abhasa, analogical religion, which is upadharma, and cheating religion, chaladharma. One who is aware of real religious principles must abandon these five as irreligious. So let's look at these. Now, Srila Prabhupada in the purport first discusses cheating religion, chaladharma, because they're all different forms of cheating. Any religious principle is opposed to the principle of surrendering to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead Krishna are to be considered religious principles of irregularity or cheating. So to one degree or another, all of these come under that heading. And one who is actually interested in religion must give them up. One should simply follow the instructions of Krishna and surrender unto him. To do this, of course, one needs very good intelligence, which may be awakened after many, many births through good association with devotees and the practice of Krishna consciousness. Everything but the principle of religion recommended by Krishna, Sarvadhamam Pritjaja Yajja Mamikam Sharanam Vraja, should be given up as irreligion. So then the next verse here begins to describe those five different types of irreligious practices. Text 13. Religious principles that obstruct one from following his own religion are called vidama. Religious principles introduced by others are called paradharma. A new type of religion created by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas is called upadharma, and interpretation by one's juggling of words is called chaladharma. So Srila Prabhupada discusses four of the five in this verse. The next verse discusses the fifth one, which is abhasa. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, to create a new type of dharma has become fashionable in this age. So-called swamis and yogis support that one may follow any type of religious system according to one's own choice, because all systems are ultimately the same. So this is a very popular notion. Srila Prabhupada mentions in one lecture that practically every day, he was saying this in American, and he was saying that practically every day in India they're creating a new god. And in that lecture he also said that, you know, I mentioned in my books that Krishna is that not that sort of a god created in the mystic factories. So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, however, such fashionable ideas are called vidama because they go against one's own religious system. So, the real religious system is described by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sarvadamam Parityagya Mamikam Saranam Braja. The real religious system is that of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in connection with Arjuna's deliverance, Yamaraj says, Dhammam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. Real religion is that which is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just as real law is that which is given by the government. No one can manufacture actual law at home, nor can one manufacture actual religion. Elsewhere it is said, Savai pumsam paro dhammo yato bhaktir adhoksaje. The real religious system is that which leads one to become a devotee of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, anything opposed to this religious system of progressive Krishna consciousness is vidama. He says it's vidama, paradama, upadama, or chaladama. Actually, so he put all four of them there, you know. So basically, you know, there's an underlying principle of all of these. Without being technical, as the five different types of five branches of irreligion. Right. So, and that five different branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion or vidama. 1, 2, 3, 4. So here there's, you know, there's vidama, paradama, abhasa, upadama, and chaladama. So, you know, there are four listed there, and then we can count vidama as the, you know, the first one, which appears to have four other branches. So, you know, they can all, you know, vidama, paradama, upadama, and chaladama. So, in the next one, we look at abhyasa. Dharma separately. Right? So these other four, Vidharma, Paradharma, Upadharma, and Chaladharma, they're all classified as irreligion. They're all classified as irreligion, or that which is opposed to actual religion. he gives a little further, you know, when one directly says something and some rascal interprets it to mean something different, that is Chaladharma. A religious system of cheating or sabdabit, a jugglery of words. One should be extremely careful to avoid these various types of cheating systems of religion. Just like, you know, they interpret Bhagavad Gita. You know, one person said, Krishna means unknown. No, Krishna means black, and black means unknown. Therefore, Krishna is unknown. But Prabhupada refutes that by quoting the Gita itself, saying, you know, Krishna says, I think it's 1854, isn't it? He says that, you know, only by devotional service can one know me as I am. So one can know Krishna by devotional service. So Krishna's saying, you can know me. And here's his pundit saying, Krishna's black, so he cannot be unknown. When you say that Krishna can be he's black, that means unknown. Therefore, we can just add our own interpretations according to our own processes. So, you know, so many different types of cheating. Or, you know, it's all... The Bhagavad Gita is not actually fact. It's allegorical. You can read into it what you want. You know, you can say the Pandavas represent the five... You know, senses, Krishna represents the soul or the mind, and, you know, so many different things like that. Or Krishna is in person. So that's Chala. You know, there's some cheating going on there. Now, and we also see that you know, this there's Paradharma, religious principles for which one is unfit. And Upadharma, and a logical religion. Upa sometimes means something that follows on from something else. Paradharma usually means... you know, something, usually something in a superior position, really, para means something. But, so for instance, you know, if in the age of Kali, you know, most religious principles were unfit to follow. But one may present them as superior, you know. But we're unfit to follow them. You know, there are also... you know, for instance, you know, in the autobiography of a yogi, Kriya Yoga, you know, people follow Kriya Yoga today, where they worship they meditate upon the universal form. And that process is recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. But to perform that, you know, these are the sort of things that Arjuna rejected, that, you know, sitting in meditation, and Ashtanga Yoga, and so many different things. You know, their activities, in one sense, that were performed previously by very qualified persons, But we cannot do them now. Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, worship the Supreme Lord by fasting from food every so many days. He would eat something, and then for the next few months, you know, he would go without so many things, and after 6 months, practically living on nothing. So when we see those activities of Dhruva Maharaj, we see that is very, we cannot imitate that. You know, it's something, but actually to present it as a process now would actually be, opposed to what we're supposed to be following. So, upadana, there are different, there is sadarshan, different processes such as, kama mamamsa and, nyaya, logic, and, there are different processes given by different sages, and also Jaimini and Patanjali. There are different processes which they're sort of sub-processes, really, aren't they? They're sort of the sub-processes where they've taken, one of the different aspects of Vedic philosophy and expanded that, They've gone on from that to expand that particular aspect. And, to take one of the different levels of Vedic, progress and just see it in an isolated way, separate from the Vedic conclusion that one must, ultimately surrender the Supreme Personality of Godhead in bhakti, that's the problem. That's where it becomes irreligion. There are different, many different examples of these things like that. Yeah. In text number 14, we see this one of the five, which is Ichaya. Abhyasa. A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abhasa. A dim reflection or a false similarity. But if one performs the prescribed duties for his particular ashram or vana, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? So again, we see, this common theme that, one may perform an activity which is not even a religious process at all. It's just manufactured. A manufactured God and a manufactured process. One may perform, some religious activities which is not prescribed for that particular time and person. It's they're unfit to follow. One may perform, religious activities which are Vedic, but they've lost their context to the ultimate goal, and they've sort of expanded something. It is following the Vedas, but it's lost its, context. And one may, misinterpret, in a cheating way, for any particular, text like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, so there's some cheating. And then here, abhyasa, one actually may be following what one should be following, But it's only such a dim reflection that it's also cheating, because the essence of it is not there as well. So, you know, so they're sort of closely linked. A pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abhasa, a dim reflection or false similarity. But if one performs the prescribed duties for a particular ashram or vana, why are they not sufficient to mitigate all material distresses? Purport. It is indicated here that everyone should strictly follow the principles of vana and ashram as given in the Shastra. One should focus upon the destination for progress, which is to become Krishna conscious. This is the aim and end of all vanas and ashrams. However, if Vishnu is not worshipped, the followers of the Varnashram institution manufacture some concocted god. This has now become fashionable for any rascal or fool to be elected god, and there are many missionaries who have concocted their own gods, giving up their relationship with the real god. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly said that one who worships the demigods has lost his intelligence. Nonetheless, we find that even an illiterate person who has lost all intelligence is elected god, and although he has a temple, it has meat-eating sannyasis, and many polluted activities go on there. This type of religious system, which misguides its poor followers, is strictly forbidden. Such pretentious religion should be stopped altogether. The original system is that a brahmana should actually become a brahmana. He should not only take birth in a brahmana family, but must also be qualified. Also, even if one is not born in a brahmana family but has brahminical qualifications, he must be considered a brahmana. By strictly following this system, one can be happy without extra endeavor. The real aim of life is to mitigate distress, and one can do this very easily by following the principles of Shastra. Shabhava vihito dharma kasha nishtaha prashantaye. Prabhupada used to quote verses such as this, you know, or paraphrase it, that the whole goal of the Vedic culture, the Vedic institution, is that everyone should be happy and without anxiety. Everyone should be peaceful. And he says that without being free from anxiety, it is very difficult or not possible to execute Krishna consciousness. And in 1969, when he was giving an initiation and doing a wedding ceremony at the same time, he said, I'm introducing this, otherwise sannyasis do not perform these marriage ceremonies. But I am introducing this, that I am doing these marriage ceremonies because to make sure that my disciples are not in anxiety. He said, generally it may be easier for men to remain in the brahmachari ashram, but especially for women, they tend to have more anxiety if they're not married. And therefore, he wants to see them happily married, and in this way. Otherwise, if there is too much anxiety, they will not be able to execute the Krishna consciousness. And for that reason, put aside which we'll see here. There are different sannyas rules. He put aside those rules for the high purpose of Krishna consciousness. For this Vedic principle stated here, so important. The real aim of life is to mitigate distress, and one can do this very easily by following the principles of Shastra. It's a very important, you know. We may, as devotees, we may say, oh, you know, we're not interested in mitigating distress. You know, we're trying to be Krishna conscious. So, you know, but Prabhupada, it's very important to understand this. Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON in such a way as to do two things. One is to put in every practical assistance to remove the stress from those trying to practice Krishna consciousness. And two, to put in every practical assistance to become Krishna conscious. Now, in the past, in ISKCON, you know, ISKCON is, you know, not through misunderstanding Prabhupada's way of doing things. They didn't care too much that, you know, if devotees were in a lot of stress, they just think, oh, that's a lack of your Krishna consciousness. You know, keep chanting. You know, just chant. And, but that actually was not, you know, if that's the case, for Prabhupada to give up a principle of sannyas on this principle, that so you'll not be in anxiety, that is, a major thing for a person of his stature to do. Especially as the leader of the movement who knows, ISKCON and himself will be open to criticism. So important is that principle that this principle of sannyas, I will put it aside, but I must do practical things to make sure that the members who are following me in ISKCON, we can do everything practical to make sure they're not in anxiety. You know, and for these things, you know, like marriage and, you know, raising children, educating children, you know, having somewhere to live and a home and an occupation. These are natural things, see. So to dismiss those, so, you know, Prabhupada is mentioning this in the purport, and it's almost something that we would look at that and say, oh, you know, maybe that's for the karmis. You know, the real aim of life is to mitigate distress, and one can do this, you know. Oh, we're not interested in mitigating distress. We're only interested in Krishna. Actually, if we're interested in Krishna, means that we want to preach Krishna consciousness. And if we want to preach Krishna consciousness, we cannot make people Krishna conscious if we keep them in a state of complete anxiety by not looking after their interests, such as getting married and raising children, so many things. And that's a mistake that we still make to this day and have made. So, and he would quote, you know, Sanskrit, such as what we see in this purport. Svabhava vitolta maha kasha nishta prashantaye. The real aim of life, in other words, the goal of the Vedas, as Prabhupada would paraphrase it, is to mitigate distress. The aim of life is satisfied by the Vedas. What are the Vedas satisfying? To mitigate distress, that no one will be in anxiety. Everyone will be happy. That's how Prabhupada says it. That's the goal of the Vedas. If they're in that situation, then they can progress spiritually. If they're not in that situation, too much distress, too much difficulty, either there'll be so much difficulty to progress in Krishna consciousness, or it will not be possible at all. At the same time, we're not catering to sense gratification. In the name of, you know, that, so then here, then you've got where they've changed in order to say, okay, if you've got some desire, you know, you're a sannyasi, you want to eat meat and something and you can't think of God, you know, like that, then maybe you should just eat meat. So we're not going that way. See? That's a different thing. A very, you know, because the difference is that you know, when Srila Prabhupada adjusts religious principles, you know, he does it in a way that he's following Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharyas. But when these other people adjust religious principles, they're not following Krishna, the Acharyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Vedas, or anything. They're following some concocted god who's just making up his own thing as he goes. That's the difference. That's our safety net. Any questions or comments on that?
So the adjustment is for pleasing the Lord.
Yeah.
It's a valid adjustment. I'm adjusting for my own pleasure because I can't follow. It's too much for my own mind.
Even if it's done to please Krishna, the adjustment still must be made in a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Not that we say, well, this is for Krishna, but actually the adjustment is, you know, something Krishna wouldn't accept. The adjustment still has to be acceptable to Krishna and the Acharyas. So, now when you get to the point where, you know, sannyasis are eating meat and, you know, there's so many other abominable things that Prabhupada doesn't even want to mention in his purports, that's definitely not pleasing to Krishna. Because, you know, as we've seen, you know, that's why we follow four regular principles. Because, you know, what we see is that when Srila Prabhupada makes an adjustment, so for instance, say Srila Prabhupada makes the adjustment, he puts aside that sannyas regulation, and he takes part in marrying his disciples, even giving them instruction when they can and can't have sex, and, you know, so many different things, and, you know, how to live. The result is they become more attached to Krishna. The result of following the Varnas here, this pretense of Varnasram, is they become more attached to meat. That's the difference. See? You know, therefore Prabhupada says in the purport, it says one should focus upon the destination for progress, which is to become Krishna conscious, the aim and end of all varnas and ashramas. So you see that the adjustments that Srila Prabhupada made, everyone is becoming very Krishna conscious. And because they're becoming Krishna conscious, then over the course of time, they're following more and more strict rules and regulations, you know, by their Krishna consciousness. Whereas in other movements, what happens is that you see in so many different religious movements, every time they make an adjustment, they become less God conscious and less able to follow any rules and regulations. So, you know, they cannot be compared to be the same. And therefore, you know, that keeping that goal of Krishna consciousness in mind, that's our destination. Getting out of the cycle of birth and death, living peacefully in this world so we can execute our Krishna consciousness, becoming Krishna consciousness and going back to Godhead. Keep that goal there. Then the adjustments can be made properly by the experts. If that goal is not there, everything is done, you know. The essence of is gone. The goal is not there. The goal is not achievable. The goal is not even known. So it's just a mess from start to finish. And the result is that because there's no God consciousness, they're simply carried away more and more by the ways of sense gratification by the age of Kali. And that's what we see. Okay, so we've looked at those. Yep.
With the Dhamma, Krishna explains that twice in the Gita about how one should not do someone else's duty even though you can. And at
yes.
the same time,
yeah.
His evidence is gone that we encourage the devotees to take a first initiation and then second initiation and then carry on the duties of. How do I see that context?
Because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced that the devotees, even though not born in Brahmin families, should be awarded the Brahmin thread to show that when one attains the status of a Vaishnava, then they have all the qualities of a Brahmana. So even though the devotees in ISKCON are given second initiation, meaning that because they've become Vaishnava, they are manifesting all the qualities of a Brahmana, still they can engage in their natural occupation, whether it be, you know, that of something, you know, like Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahmana. So they should still, and therefore, as I mentioned in the last class, or Srimad Bhagavatam, I can't remember which, but Prabhupada says specifically that, you know, a Vaishnava has all the qualities of a Brahmana, and it doesn't matter whether that Vaishnava is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or Chandala, or Yavana. Yeah. So the Brahman, you know, so we're not saying now you've taken Brahman initiation, you know, you've got to be at the deity every day worshipping the deities. We shouldn't be. We probably are saying that, but we shouldn't be. We're saying you've taken Brahman initiation because you're a Vaishnava. And you know, and what we should be saying is please start manifesting some good qualities. As you know, but, you know, stay in your natural occupational duty. Yeah. And what they take it is, you know, I'm now qualified to worship the deity, and that proves that I've got good qualities. So we're taking it in a different place. So in other words, you know, Arjun, Krishna said, you're the true son, you're a sannyasi. Prabhupada says in the Gita, in several times, in the purports, Brahman, you know, Arjun's qualified as a sannyasi. What is a sannyasi? Only Brahmanas can take sannyas.
Sorry,
what was it? You know, sannyas is actually the perfect stage of a Brahmana. Arjuna was called a Brahmana several times. As Krishna's saying, you know, you've got all the qualities of a Brahmana. The perfect Brahmana, not just a Brahmana, the perfect Brahmana, topmost. But what do I want you to do, Arjuna? Yes, you don't want to fight this, oh, there's a lovely little temple in a village there, go and worship the deities there, be a pujari. No, I want you to still fight. Even though you've got all the qualities of a perfect Brahmana, I still want you to engage in your natural occupational duty, and that's how we should be preaching. So then we push forward. Even if a man is poor, he should not endeavour to improve his economic condition just to maintain his body and soul together, or just to become a famous religionist. Just as a great python, although lying in one place, not endeavouring for its livelihood, gets the food it needs to maintain body and soul, one who is desireless also obtains his livelihood without endeavour. So, again, Srila Prabhupada begins his purport, reminding us of the goal, which is very important to have. Human life is simply meant for developing Krishna consciousness. One need not even try to earn a livelihood to maintain body and soul together. So, and then he quotes Narada Muni from 1.5.18 Bhagavatam, that one should simply endeavour to increase his Krishna consciousness. One should not desire to do anything else, even to earn his livelihood. Then we get some different examples. Then the question is asked, why should one approach a person who is blind with wealth? Rather, one should depend on Krishna and he will give everything. All the members of our Krishna consciousness movement, whether they be grihasthas or sannyasis, should try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement with determination, and Krishna will supply all necessities. The process of a jagravritti, the means of livelihood of a python, is very much appreciated in this regard. Even though one may be very poor, he should simply try to advance in Krishna consciousness and not endeavour to earn his livelihood. So, it's very interesting here, you know, because as we've heard before, that, you know, one of the ways that we follow this as devotees, we don't just sort of lie down on the street outside the temple, you know, or in the parks, you know. So, there's no devotees in Mangalarti this morning. You know. Oh, they're all lying in the parks around Melbourne, like the pythons, waiting for some food to come. But the way we practice that is that we, you know, we may take up some, what do they call it, you know, one's place of preaching or devotional service. There's a term for it, something desh. Prabhudatta desh, yeah, you know, devotees take up, you know, so this will be my place of serving Krishna, like that, Melbourne or Sydney, like that. Sometimes devotees take up a place of serving Krishna. And that's one way that the python method is enacted by the devotees, you know, that I would just stay here, you know, I can run, you know, all over here, there, looking for my livelihood, but no, I'm sure I'll take up this place as my Prabhudatta desh. And everything that will come like that, and I can develop some service very nicely like that, you know. So that is the python method there. But what he, you know, as Prabhupada says, it doesn't mean hanging around the temple, and following the Maha Prasad as it comes off, you know, the altar as soon as it says, that's not quite it. I'm the python, yes, I stay in the courtyard when that tray of Maha Prasad comes by, you know, I will be here, you know, at every offering. he says, all the members of our Krishna consciousness movement, whether they be grihasthas or sannyasis, should try to spread the Krishna consciousness movement with determination. Yeah. Spreading the movement. Now, you know, a devotee asked me the other day, he said, you know, we're not making a lot of Western devotees. And you know, he said, why is that? Well, of course, it's not up to me to say why, but, you know, somehow or another said something anyway. But, you know, previously this was more the mood, you know, in ISKCON, that Prabhupada, you know, just leave a few good men and women in the temple to run, and everyone else go out and preach and do something and like that, you know, do kirtan and distribute prasad, have festivals like that. So, that mood was very infectious. You know, it's a very, very infectious mood. And, you know, the Western people loved it. You know, that's what the Western people picked up on, you know. They're not, Western people are not the sort of people, this is what I was telling this devotee, they're generally, you know, they're not the sort of people who just come and sort of look at the deities for 2 hours and, you know, and just sit quietly and not do anything. You know, if a Westerner comes to the temple, they want to dance, they want a feast, they want a festival, they want some activity, you know, like that. If we're not doing that, they're going to go somewhere else. And that's just all there is to it. You know, and in ISKCON previously, that's why it's very easy, you know, to, you know, Prabhupada went out into Tompkins Square Park. And they just come from everywhere, you know. Okay, there's an event in the park. Yeah, that's good. But they're not, you know, they're not generally that sort of person that just comes and just stands in front of the deities and praying and so many things. You know, they're a different, you know, it's not very attractive to them. Even if you've been a devotee for many years as a Westerner, it's still not attractive. You know, I mean, you do it, there's certain things you do, but generally there's a whole style of ISKCON which, you know, hopefully it's there in many other temples around the world, but, you know, in some temples that I've seen, especially if they have a huge Hindu congregation, you know, we have to be very aware of being spectator devotees or expecting everyone to come here as a spectator, you know. There needs to be that, you know, they like to really involve their talents. You know, in a lot of kirtans, in the early days, people would come in, they would, you know, have sticks with their bottle tops on it, they would have, you know, the washboards, they would, you know, play the spoons, you know, all sorts of things. They would join in on the kirtan. Now, even, you know, devotees, if they can't do the fancy stuff on the kartals, they're scared to pick them up or pick up a mridanga, you know. It was sort of more open that, you know, just if you can play something, even if it's a bit out of tune, you listen to some of Prabhupada's early kirtans. You know, they're all singing out of tune, they're all playing, you know, there's a drone of the harmonium in the back. Everyone loves it. You know, nothing's in tune. But what they love is that there is no inhibition for anyone to jump in and just join in and do what they can. I don't have to become a Hindu or an Indian or an expert at this or that to join kirtan. And as soon as we have that mood, some people are just not going to come. As soon as we, you know, sort of really limit the whole thing to, you know, you'll fit in if you like this, and if you're not like this, you don't fit in. Okay, all those who don't feel they can't fit in, they'll just won't come. And a lot of Westerners are in that category. So, you know, this mood here, Prabhupada's saying the python, he's not saying, don't hang around the temples, you know, chasing maha and position and, you know, some facility in the office and, you know, whatever it is, social life, you know, whatever, you know, facility. The python means you preach Krishna consciousness with great determination. You use the facility of the temple to preach. That's the python. And by doing that, Krishna will provide everything. And that's the other thing that you'll see with the devotees in those days. They had that faith. They made no arrangement for their future. No financial arrangement. They did not know where they would live, how they would earn, how they would eat. But every day, day in, day out, I know if I go out and preach, everything will be okay. So, you know, this is, and that's the python. That's the python method. Any comments?
The beginning of the verse seems to be telling that you don't have to endeavor so much for maintaining your economic condition.
Mm.
And then a couple of verses before we read that, the Varnashram, there just to keep your. Be satisfied, and internally you can practice.
Yeah.
Now, and Prabhupada also said you mentioned Prabhupada was doing the marriages.
Mm. Yeah.
So again, it seems to be like the same different things. Is that like I should?
No. So as you can see, you know, there's a nice balance where. We are never neglectful So you've got two things here. When I gave the example of Prabhupada looking after, you know, marriages and putting aside the sannyas principle, he was looking after the making sure that if there was some anxiety in his disciples or followers, that by getting them nicely married, they would not be in that anxiety and their Krishna consciousness would then progress. And if he saw somehow that the anxiety was there, he would make another adjustment for them. He would do something practical. That's the ultimate manager, the leader. Those who are, bringing people under the shelter, they're looking after them. You don't see, he's not looking after himself. He's not making any arrangement for his own self. But anyone who's coming to Krishna consciousness, he's very considerate that they shall not be in unnecessary anxiety, that I can see the Krishna consciousness becoming hampered, slowed down, or anything. So, for preaching Krishna consciousness, the preacher has got this faith. I just preach Krishna consciousness, everything will be there. People are coming to Krishna consciousness. They may not be able to, just have that faith in Krishna that I'll just, put everything aside and go and pray. And if I see some anxiety, then as a temple, as a zone, as a movement, we will put into place those things Prabhupada did to show us that, let's make sure that no one is unnecessarily, not the children, not the wives, and not the brahmacharis, the grihas, the sannyasi. No one should be, there should be the proper, as a movement, we should look after that. So, the other thing is that, what we also see is that these things are done in a very expert way. I'm in class, that's a good one. Rejected, I'm in class. So we'll see in verses that come up how this is adjusted. The goal being Krishna consciousness, we're very fortunate. We understand the goal that if we're practicing complete detachment from this world and complete faith and surrender to Krishna, that to the degree we have that surrender and faith and realization, we can just preach without worrying about anything, and understanding Krishna will look after us. To the degree that a devotee doesn't quite have that surrender and faith, we make sure that they're not in unnecessary anxiety. But we do it in such a way that we're not increasing their attachment to sense gratification, but there's enough liberty for them to actually progress in their attachment to Krishna. See? Marriage is like that. There's enough liberty of sense gratification that actually it increases their attachment to Krishna. If we're offering, liberty of sense gratification to the point where it's decreasing their attachment to Krishna, we're doing the wrong thing. So these things, they appear to be contradictory, but they're not. If we're properly increasing people's attachment, faith and surrender to Krishna, then the right thing is being done. And that means that And if they're becoming very surrendered to Krishna, means we see that their control of the mind and senses and their attachment to sense gratification is, you know, concomitantly disappearing, which is what we want. So, you know, they have very little anxiety. There's no wants, or, you know, there's no hankering or lamenting and things like that. So, but where there is anxiety, hankering, lamenting, we adjust it in such a way that that hankering, lamenting goes and the attachment to Krishna increases, then we're doing the right thing. So a bit of a balance, yeah. So, you know, in general, we try to be very strict with ourselves and very lenient with others, you know. But to the point where it's helpful for them, not lenient to the point where it's, you know, we're lenient where it's helpful for them. But it is explained a little bit further on as we go as well, yeah, that adjustment. One who is content and satisfied and who links his activities with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, residing in everyone's heart, enjoys transcendental happiness without endeavouring for his livelihood. Where is such happiness for a materialistic man who is impelled by lust and greed, and who therefore wanders in all directions with the desire to accumulate wealth? So devotees avoid this, you know, wandering all directions looking for, you know, wealth and this and that and the other. You know, they take their Prabhudatta desh, you know, somewhere that they can preach, and, you know, they're satisfied with what comes by the grace of the Lord, and they serve the Lord knowing that, you know, through that devotional service, it helps them to always think of Krishna. Text 17, for a person who has suitable shoes on his feet, there is no danger even when he walks on pebbles and thorns. For him everything is auspicious. Similarly, for one who is always self-satisfied, there is no distress. Indeed, he feels happiness everywhere. You know, there's that statement of, might be Koresh, I can't remember his name, follower of Ramanujacharya, and you know, to protect his spiritual master, you know, they took out his eyes and so many things, and tortured him. I think one of them even was killed, one that was with him. But you know, he said that I used to see this material world as misery everywhere, but now wherever I look, I only see the mercy of the Lord, you know, and I'm in great ecstasy like that. So, you know, the devotee, that situation of Krishna consciousness as described here, they're like, you know, someone has suitable shoes, they can walk on pebbles and thorns and it really doesn't affect them. And, you know, a devotee who, they may experience different distress and obstacles and things in this world, but, you know, if they're in transcendental bliss through the devotional service, they just don't feel it, you know, they're not obstructed by it. It's not that the pebbles disappear, that's the point. You know, it's not the pebbles and stones will always be there. And so it's not saying when a devotee becomes Krishna conscious, there's no problems in this world. No, there'll always be problems. But they've got, just like we have shoes, there'll always be stones and pebbles and thorns, but you've got the good shoes. There's always problems, but if you're in transcendental bliss because you're devotional service, preaching, then, you know, you not be affected by it at all. So really, you know, the best prayer, you know, we quite often pray to for devotees who are undergoing, you know, different distresses. And of course, you know, as we say, we want to help them practically as far as we can. We also, you know, want to, you know, because obviously sometimes they're not, due to their level of Krishna consciousness, they may not be coping with the difficulties in their life. So, you know, we may pray that some of those distresses are reduced for them. But ultimately we're praying that they become Krishna conscious, because that's the ultimate remedy. My dear King, a self-satisfied person can be happy even with only drinking water. However, one who is driven by the senses, especially the tongue and genitals, must accept the position of a household dog to satisfy his senses. Now, according to the Shastras, a Brahmana or a cultured person in Krishna consciousness will not enter anyone's service to maintain body and soul together, and especially not for satisfaction of the senses. So as far as earning a livelihood, and of course we're talking about, you know, how people take second initiation, and, you know, one of the qualities of a Brahmin is to be, you know, satisfied. Peacefully satisfied, and that means that they'll accept whatever Krishna brings, but they'll not enter the service of anyone else. So, generally, we very rarely see that. Mm.
So this means the endeavor would have not over endeavor. Is that the right understanding
for you? Yes, certainly we won't over endeavor. And, you know, which means that a Brahmana, let's say some of the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas are in the service of others for the occupation. It may happen to 90% of us, probably 99%, not everyone, almost 100%. So it means that they'll not over endeavour, which means that, you know, they're going to, there's certain things that they just won't accept, you know, that there's no time to go to the temple anymore, there's no time to chant their rounds, they're working to that point to keep the job, you know, their health is struggling, or, you know, so there's generally, you know, so our devotees will usually try and find a job that at least allows them to, you know, do certain amounts of services and, you know, go to the festivals and hear class and attend Mangala, you know, they're not too far away from home, not too much travel. So they make those adjustments. But, you know, if they were able to make full adjustment, then, you know, they would actually just fully accept, you know, those things that they want to do in life as a devotee as priority, and only the work that you know, fits into that they'll accept. So you know, it's not always, these things are not always possible immediately, but they can be goals that devotees work towards. It takes a lot of intelligence and a lot of, you know, if one, you know, one can't imitate positions of advanced life that one is not qualified, you know, to execute. One can't imitate advanced devotees. So, you know, to have that faith, you know, that, okay, I will experience tribulation if I try and, you know, organize my life in such a way where I'm pretty much self-sufficient and able to just live on what Krishna, you know, provides from day to day, week to week. That's my only guarantee. And I'm prepared to accept whatever tribulations come my way, until, you know, I establish myself in that, but I have faith that it will happen, because that's what Krishna says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. Now, as an example, when Srila Prabhupada took sannyas, and then he was alone in Delhi and trying to publish his books, and he went through so much tribulation, so much difficulty. He said in a lecture in 1969, I think it was in New York, that it was New York, he said that I become bitter. Bitter. He said I thought perhaps I should not have taken sannyas. That I've done the wrong thing. And maybe I've done the wrong thing. And on top of that, then he got gored by a bull. You know, while he's trying to publish his Back to Godheads. He said there was so much tribulation. And so, you know, but he kept his faith. See, he kept his faith. Ordinarily, someone else in that situation would say, oh, no, I've really just got to look after myself a bit here. I'm trying to do this Back to Godhead and, you know, do this work for, Krishna or ISKCON, and I'm suffering. I'm just going under here, you know, like that. The Prabhupada kept his faith. That's not ordinary. You know, we can't imitate that. And but then he said, in that same lecture, he said, but he said in the beginning, if one really wants Krishna, but there may be some attachment. And Prabhupada said, you know, he's talking about attachment, and then he's talking as if, you know, he's attached. He's saying, you know, I thought I would become wealthy and then I would execute the order of my spiritual master and preach. But Krishna smashed that attachment. See, so sometimes grihastas, you know, I will get this home, you know, I might, you know, get another home for, you know, the future, and then, you know, a bit of a bank balance, and, you know, set up the kids in education. When I've got all them, you know, maybe then I'll preach, you know. But if they really want Krishna, Krishna may say, well, I can see, you know, you really want me. I might smash that attachment a bit, you know. Prabhupada says, Krishna may do that in the beginning. In the beginning, you know. So it's a very scary verse, but, you know, I like the fact he says in the beginning, okay, all right, there's an end. There's an end to it. And he said, therefore, Krishna says in the Gita, you know, declare it boldly. You declare it, Arjuna. Declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. So we're reading this verse here. And we have to remember that. That's what Prabhupada is saying. Krishna said that. And we're reading these, that if we follow that path, the grihasthas follow that path. And Krishna's saying, but, you know, how much was Arjuna tested? In the beginning, how much? But Prabhupada says, but Krishna will test the devotee, but ultimately the devotee will become glorious, you know, beyond all comprehension. So, but it doesn't matter here, it doesn't matter sannyas or grihastha, you know, these principles hold true to the Vaishnavas. You know, we're all, you know, the same principle, basically, all of us, you know. And that's what the Brahman thread signifies, you know. Vaishnava means you're coming to the platform of Brahmana or sannyas. You know, very advanced Brahmana, sannyas. Even in grihastha life, they consider brahmacharya, brahmacharya, sannyas, if they're actually on that level in their heart. And we're following the same principle that, you know, we try as much as we can to depend on Krishna and preach Krishna consciousness, and he will look after things. But You know, the other thing, of course, is that when Krishna does make arrangements, we have to, you know, accept that. Not that, you know, Krishna makes some arrangement for us and then we don't accept it out of false renunciation. You know, arrangement means that, we understand it's Krishna's arrangement. If Krishna arranges something for us that comes, you know, without much over-endeavour of its own accord, it really facilitates our life in Krishna consciousness. You know, those things are very important. Now, if, you know, huge wealth comes in, property, you know, some work opportunities, whatever, you know, and it facilitates that life where there's just the opportunity to do so much direct engagement in Krishna consciousness, and somehow this is just maintaining my existence, we should not reject it. You know, oh, you know, here's all this money come this way. No, I'm going to live simply like a python. You know? See, in some cases, with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, you know, he taught the children, he educated them at the request of one of the kings. And the king said to him that, you know, because he didn't have to teach him for the rest of his life, but just something, but he said, I will put you on a pension for the rest of your life. He rejected that. And he rejected that because it would implicate him in the king's service and he would not be free as he wanted to be to execute the service that his spiritual master, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. See? So, otherwise, you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura was willing to accept unlimited opulence in the service of Krishna. But he didn't consider it was Krishna's mercy or Krishna's arrangement if it implicated him against the service, you know, that he wanted to do for Krishna. That's how we see if it's Krishna's mercy. We don't reject it just because it's opulence or property or this or that or the other. We reject it because of how it implicates us and complicates our ability to serve Krishna. So that takes a little bit of intelligence. If we have a really strong desire to serve Krishna, we'll see the opportunity. But if we're actually just a little bit pretentious, we won't know what to do because we won't perceive the opportunity. You know. The other phone. Yeah, okay. I'll turn this thing down. Questions, comment? Yeah. So it's now what we see with you know, Srila Prabhupada is that Prabhupada, his life demonstrated, you know, this principle. His son, you know, Prabhupada showing, you know, he would say, you know, and on the same, you know, the thing was the same talk that he was given to his disciples, that he said, Krishna obliged me, you know, that literally took away everything, that in the end when I got to the West, instead of coming here as a wealthy man to preach, I came here with 7 rupees. Well, he says it's practically no money at all, which it was. And he said, but now I have hundreds of homes, hundreds and hundreds of children, and those, I don't have to look after the children, they're looking after me. You know? That's it. So he was saying to us, and he said it in that talk, you just develop your attachment to Krishna. And if you do that, you know, and preach Krishna consciousness and help others, your life will be perfect, everything will be there, Krishna will bless you, and you know, there's nothing else for you to do. So he's saying, I did it, it works. This is my life. You do it too. See, so, you know, the followers of Srila Prabhupada, we, you know, they all had that faith. We still have that faith. When we hear about Prabhupada, everything it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada did those simple things. You know, he just dedicated his life to preaching and like that. He tried the other way. It didn't quite work. Krishna, you know, took away things. So we're followers of Prabhupada. That as much as we try to follow that. Not a false imitation, but developing that level of faith and surrender, then putting that faith and surrender in Krishna, being prepared to be tested with some tribulation, but knowing that it is a test, and Krishna always, you know, declare it boldly, the devotee will never perish. He will, you know, always be successful. And wherever there's Krishna and Arjuna, you know, there will be opulence, victory, morality, these things. This is the ultimate teaching, the ultimate, you know, statement of the Gita. All these things will be there. And then Prabhupada, sometimes to even, you know, further emphasize that, he gave the example of, you know, Dhruva Maharaj, that, you know, even if one does have material attachments, one is a devotee, we're trying to surrender, and still we've got attachments. Prabhupada says, you'll see from Dhruva Maharaj that even Dhruva Maharaj, he said, to, you know, now I've seen the Lord, I'm not interested in my previous attachments. And Krishna said, nonetheless, you will enjoy Dhruva Loka, because, you know, that's the way I deal with my devotees. And you'll go back to Godhead. Like that. So, you know, so in other words, then Krishna is saying, you know, sometimes Krishna tests his devotees in the beginning, but ultimately they're glorious. And sometimes, like, you know, Dhruva, if he's really satisfied, he just, you know, fulfills their material attachments, you know, to be opulent and well-situated, a nice wife and children and home and everything, and he takes them back to Godhead. So either way, you know, a devotee should understand the way Krishna works. Especially for those who preach Krishna consciousness. And this is what we're studying every day. And if we don't practice or try and, increasing our surrender and faith means we put this into practice and watch it work in our life. But it can't be done artificially. And if devotees do try to falsely imitate something, they can, you know, mess up their life and their devotional life. You know, if they try to just falsely imitate for some false prestige or what have you, that's very dangerous. Very dangerous to imitate something falsely for ulterior motive. If we're doing something because we actually want to develop our attachment for Krishna, that's very good. We do the same thing, you know, for false prestige and self-aggrandizement and what have you. It's a dangerous thing to imitate devotees. If we're not after, you know, trying to increase our attachment to Krishna, but we're doing, you know, some false renunciation, we can mess up our family, we can mess up our finances, and we can mess up our devotional life, and that's a different thing. So, and therefore, as we go through these chapters, you see how it's always stating, you know, associate with devotees, under the guidance of a devotee, under the guidance of a spiritual master. As soon as we lose that contact with devotees who are practicing this and know how to do that, then there's so many mistakes can be made. So, so in this purport here, of course, to text number 18, according to the Shastras, a Brahmana or a cultured person in Krishna consciousness will not enter anyone's service to maintain body and soul together, and especially not for the satisfaction of the senses. A true Brahmana is always satisfied. Even if he has nothing to eat, he can drink a little water and be satisfied. This is only a matter of practice. Unfortunately, however, no one is educated in how to be satisfied in self-realization. As explained above, a devotee is always satisfied because he feels the presence of the super soul within his heart and thinks of him 24 hours a day. This is real satisfaction. A devotee is never driven by the dictations of the tongue and genitals, and thus he is never victimized by the laws of material nature. And of course, if one tries to falsely imitate an advanced devotee, and such a person has a tendency to satisfy the tongue and the genitals, they can place themselves in a very, very unstable position. And Maya will pounce upon them immediately. And they'll have all sorts of problems. Text 19. Because of greed for the sake of the senses, the spiritual strength, education, austerity and reputation of a devotee or brahmana who is not self-satisfied dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. So, here Prabhupada's talking about devotees as well as brahmanas. That, because of greed for the sake of the senses, spiritual strength, education, austerity, and reputation of a devotee or brahmana dwindle, and his knowledge gradually vanishes. The strong bodily desires and needs of a person disturbed by hunger and thirst are certainly satisfied when he eats. Similarly, if one becomes very angry, that anger is satisfied by chastisement and reaction and its reaction. But as for greed, even if a greedy person has conquered all the directions of the world or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he will not be satisfied. So, now, this verse is connected to the previous verse. Greed for the sake of the senses. And bear in mind that it is also addressing devotees. Brahmanas and devotees. We're not just talking about karmis. We're talking about transcendentalists and devotees as well. Or to speak of karmis. So in the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that lust, anger and greed are the causes of the conditioned soul's bondage in this material world. When strong lusty desires for sense gratification are unfulfilled, one becomes angry. This anger can be satisfied when one chastises his enemy. But when there is an increase in lobha or greed, which is the greatest enemy caused by Rajaguna, the mode of passion, how can one advance in Krishna consciousness? And he's talking about devotees. Sometimes, we see here that, sometimes when devotees are following four regular principles, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating. If their level of advancement in Krishna consciousness is, if it's a struggle for them to follow those principles, then there's a sense of frustration and anger. And, we have seen in ISKCON that those devotees vent that sometimes in the way they preach. there's almost like a hatred for women sometimes. I've seen men, It's almost like because they're restricted in sense gratification, there's like a hatred for women when they preach. His anger for women comes out, you know, or children. Or if they're jealous of, you know, if they're struggling to, you know, with the four regular principles and they can't get a wife or a husband, then they take it, they can become envious of those who have wife and husband. They preach and they preach against them. And, you know, if they can't have children, you know, they become envious of children or those who have children. I've seen all these things. If somehow they're having, you know, they can't achieve the position they want, they take it out on their subordinates. So, you know, but as it says here, at least there's something, you know, you get a little bit of satisfaction. And even in Krishna consciousness, we see these things happen. Well, they take it out on the karmis, you know, some of the lectures, you know, Srimad Bhagavatam. I saw, you know, one sannyasi, who was a guru, he was an initiating guru. In King's Cross, and of course in King's Cross, you know, people used to come in off the street because we invited them, you know, come in, you know, hear a talk at a Sunday feast or something and have some prasadam. And of course, you know, King's Cross, there's people from all walks of life, there's prostitutes, there's drug addicts, you know, we're inviting them in. So there was this one lady sitting there, and of course she just sat down like the other ladies, but of course the speaker, you know, took offence the fact that, you know, her dress was a bit short, and literally, you know, said, you know, you're sitting there, you know, dressed like that, like a prostitute. He just went on and on and on. She got up and walked out crying. So, you know, it's anger, it's frustration. Of course, that sannyas later fell down. But, you know, there's some satisfaction there. So we are, you know, we are talking about, you know, within Krishna consciousness, with this greed and that, we look at the karmis and point the finger at them. But he says, but as for greed, which is the mode of passion, how can one advance in Krishna consciousness, you know? You know, that greed for position, for adoration, for facility, you know, whatever, you know? And we've seen that in our movement. There is no end to it. It is very dangerous, very dangerous. And now, you know, it's a very important point because, you know, quite often in ISKCON when these things come up, especially amongst, you know, people who have these intense greed or ambition, you know, very self-motivated, you know, there's desire for Krishna consciousness, but there's some real personal greed going on, you know, and ambition. And quite often they're excused as, oh, they have their personality, we all have different personalities and things like that. So we can say that, or we can say what Prabhupada's saying, which is a different thing. You know, what Prabhupada is saying is this. He says something, he says, this greatest energy enemy caused by Rajaguna, the mode of passion, how can one advance in Krishna consciousness? If that is there, it is so destructive. How can one advance in Krishna consciousness? How can one consider oneself advancing Krishna consciousness? Now that's different, Prabhupada says, but you know, a transcendental form of greed we can accept. And what is that? If one is very greedy to enhance his Krishna consciousness, this is a great boon. Tatralolam ekalam mulam. This is the best path available. And we have to distinguish between the two. You know, that greed for facility and adoration and position and, you know, fame and glory and to be written in the history of ISKCON or whatever, you know, is different to greed to enhance one's Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada saying one type of greed, how can you advance in Krishna consciousness with that greed? And the other type, very favourable. And if we can't distinguish within ourselves or others, then there's a problem. That can create serious problems in ISKCON, isn't it? You know, when if we take someone who's very greedy, you know, motivated greedy, and we say, oh, they've got all the qualifications of a good leader. Or we do the other. We say, oh, this person, you know, they're really just so intensely trying to become, oh, you know, selfish, you know, greedy, you know, rascal. One time, you know, I don't look at the deities too much, but in New Zealand when I was there, I was accused of looking at the deities too much. Right? And I'm thinking, what? You know, I'm not even standing in any way. I usually stand to the side anyway. And I don't look at them very long. But that was too much. I'm being, you know, greedy. Looking at them too much. They said I had a disease. It was a disease condition in devotional service. Of course, you know, most of these things I never take any notice of. But I'm giving examples that they do happen. That, you know, we have to learn to distinguish. They're not the same thing.
Regarding this greed, Prabhu.
But my greed? I've stopped now.
Even for a practicing devotee, if he has greed or if some traces of greed has been noticed, that this process of you know, Krishna consciousness, chanting and hearing, will it not purify that person?
Yeah. Look,
so what is the impact?
Again, see, in the days, the earlier days of Krishna consciousness, as I've explained before, a very significant difference I see between now and then is that devotees were very eager to hear from other devotees and take instruction. So, you know, if devotees were, you know, had greed or lust, you know, like, you know, a devotee, you know, would point out, oh, you know, this would be greedy, you know, like that, you know, your activities there. And they would say, oh, thank you, Prabhu, yeah, you know, I have that, I'm trying to control it, and you're doing really well. We can see that, you know, you're doing really well. So, that, you know, but you could point it out to them, and they're trying to, there was no problem. Now, you can't speak to anyone. It's very difficult. No, you know, devotees have this tendency, I'll listen to one devotee or two and that's it. Others I just don't listen to. And therefore, you know, if there's, you know, it's a very cheating process by which, you know, people tend to associate with persons by which their cunningness is not detected or allowed to go on. And that's, I do notice that. People associate with devotees in such a way that if they have some, you know, aberrations in the devotional service, they associate in such a way that it can go on, either undetected or, you know, people are turning a blind eye for one reason or another. You know, the occurrence of that is quite rampant, and in previous days of ISKCON, that just was a very rare thing. Devotees actually listened and they took advice from everyone, And you know, when and therefore it made it very easy. You know, if someone's a bit greedy, a bit angry, a bit disturbed, a bit under the nose, someone picked it up, someone told them straight away. You know, it's not like 6 months, 6 years, 20 years later. As soon as it was noticed. But it was done in a very nice way, and they accepted it, and there was a little discussion about it, and maybe talk about some past times. And they, everyone knew that they were trying to advance, we were trying to advance. It was a very, a lot of encouragement. So it's quite open. You know, we're all happy to admit our frailties, and you always felt very safe, you know, discussing, you know, I'm having difficulty with my mind or this, that or the other, you know. So it was much more open, you know, there's a lot more, these days the association is not going on properly, you know.
But the sadhana, does it not
purify them? They still will be continuing with the sadhana. Look, if, you know, throughout, from the start of one's devotional life to the very end, I thought I'd turn it on. From the start of one's devotional life, at every stage, adol, shada, you know, sadhusanga, bhajanikriya, nishta, ruchi, at every stage of our devotional service, the key factor is association with devotees. It's not that we get a little association in the beginning, boom, off you go, you know. Actually, at every stage, your ability to maintain that level of devotional service and progress to the next depends on your association with devotees. So what is that sadhana that they're doing that is devoid of the association of devotees? What sort of sadhana? What sadhana works where sadhana... it means we're practicing Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees. That's called sadhana. What are they saying is sadhana? I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, not in the association of devotees. Or I pick one or two, sadhana, there's a new definition of sadhusanga, association of devotees. There's a new definition of devotees. You know, there's one or two and the rest are not. I'll accept one or two as devotees and the rest I don't accept as any consequence. Sadhana means I'm practicing devotional service in the association of devotees. That's sadhana. If you remove the association of devotees, if that's, not done properly, what is the effect of that sadhana? What sadhana, you know, can we consider is very powerful without the proper association of devotees? You know, chanting Hare Krishna, you know, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, hearing, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. What do we mean by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? You hear from a devotee. In the association of devotees, and you discuss with devotees. One may say, this devotee loves the Bhagavatam. Shouldn't they be purified by that? But how are they, how are they going through Bhagavatam? Are they hearing from authorized devotees in the association of devotees, or are they just going through it, them in their mind and their senses? Yes, there's purification, but the scriptures, give us so much reference that if you perform your devotional service in the association properly in the association of very nice devotees, the potent effect of that, as we say, in the nectar devotion, there are five different, of the 64 items of sadhana, five are considered more potent than anything. And amongst those two, chanting of the Hare Krishna and association with devotees are considered, the top monks amongst the potent. And then without the association of the devotees, what is it, how much is chanting, of anything is going on. So this association with devotees, if it's done properly, makes every aspect of our sadhana very, very potent. And if that is not there, we take away those most potent things, we remove that. Yes, they're performing sadhana, but what is the potency of that? To purify. And look at how powerful this greed is, considered. Now, what is our potency? If someone is under the, intoxicated, mad, bewitched, illusion, bewildered, under the control of greed, and they're not properly taking the association of devotees, or in the association of devotees are being offensive, how much ability do they have to control such a powerful force? This is not to be played with, someone under that control. So powerful. Here you see that. But as for greed, even if a greedy person is conquered in all the directions of the world, or has enjoyed everything in the world, still he'll not be satisfied. Still. You imagine how much effort, how much trouble, how much gain, apparent gain, you've conquered all the directions of the world to satisfy your greed. How much that has taken over a person's life. Right? And then they think, oh yes, that so I'll come to Krishna consciousness. How many people you think no one ever comes to ISKCON who's not infected by such greed? We will have thousands of people come to Krishna consciousness who are under the influence of this greed. And when they come to Krishna consciousness, we're hoping that they'll properly associate with the devotees and perform their sadhana, and that will fix the problem. But for those who don't properly associate with devotees, how are they going to control that, with their sadhana? It's such a powerful force. It's a form of madness. People come here, have different forms of madness, you tell them, chant Hare Krishna, look at the deities, And that madness, is very powerful. This greed is a form of madness. Being bewitched, under the spell, controlled, servant of, is uncontrollable. So, So, we've looked at, lust and anger. Everyone knows how difficult it is to control lust. This greed is being placed, they have that sort of greed is being placed even harder or difficult. We all know how difficult it is to control lusty desires. We actually come to this in this chapter. That's like saying, we all know, because, we've been practicing Krishna consciousness so far, anyone who comes to this Krishna consciousness movement, everyone in this world suffers from, trying to control lusty desires. Right? And if one is not serious about their Krishna consciousness, we all know that, they'll only have a limited success. Right? And here, this greed is being placed as something more difficult. So we have to put it into perspective. And we see that the devotees have to be very serious about their sadhana in association with devotees, without aparads, nice relationship, hearing properly, taking on that instruction, putting into practice to control the lust and the anger and the greed like that. Otherwise, it's not such a cheap thing. So, O King Yudhisthira, many persons with varied experience, many legal advisors, many learned scholars, and many persons eligible to become presidents of learned assemblies fall down into hellish life because of not being satisfied with their positions. So bear in mind, keep in context, you know, these, we've heard so many different aspects of, you know, religious principles, following the Barnasram, and the different ashrams of life and the benefits. And now, you know, in this chapter, you know, we're getting sort of also, you know, a summary understanding of, you know, despite all the different rules and regulations for each of the ashrams and so many different things, bear in mind that Krishna consciousness is the main goal. Then if Krishna consciousness is the main goal, you know, what are the main obstacles and dangers, and, you know, how do we conquer them? So, you know, we're sort of seeing this whole section in regards to that. So it's almost like, you know, this is like, say, you know, a mother or a father have raised their children all their life and they've given them so many instructions, and before they die, they say, oh, I'm going to write down 20 things. I want you to just always remember this. And they know that if they remember those 20 things, it summarizes their whole life of what they've taught them. So this is sort of what we're getting here. For spiritual advancement, one should be materially satisfied. For if one is not materially satisfied, his greed for material development will result in the frustration of his spiritual advancement. There are two things that nullify all good qualities, and this comes back to your previous question about poverty and wealth as well. One is poverty. If one is poverty stricken, all his good qualities become null and void. Right? So therefore, you know, we're saying one should put one's faith in Krishna and not look after their own, you know, even the grihasthas, not look after their own sort of, you know, wealth and what have you. But at the same time, if they become too poverty stricken, you lose all your good qualities. So you can't, you know, it is there. It is there. Similarly, if one becomes too greedy, and of course, as we said, this depends upon one's spiritual position. So Srila Prabhupada could be so poverty stricken that, you know, to save, you know, one paisa, you know, whatever, if that's even worth anything, he would walk for miles in the hot sun, you know, to spend that money on his BTG publication. And practically, you know, faint, people find him fainted on the ground at that, so poverty stricken. His spiritual advancement, he didn't lose all his good qualities, but he had the spiritual advancement to be on that position. Otherwise, to the degree one's spiritual position is not there, one will lose their good qualities. So, you know, bear that in mind. Similarly, if one becomes too greedy, his good qualifications are lost. Therefore, the adjustment is that one should not be poverty-stricken, but one must try to be fully satisfied with the bare necessities of life and not be greedy. For a devotee, now we saw Prabhupada's example of not being greedy, although he wanted as much money as possible for ISKCON, where, you know, sometimes that you know, the example of the person who's in India come in and put a big check or something for a lot of money on his desk. Prabhupada didn't pay any attention. He didn't care whether he was going to take it, but he didn't pay him any attention at all, because the person come in with pride, you know, okay, mate. And then some other lady coming past Prabhupada's door who wanted to see him. She had some flowers, and he called her in. Yes, you come in. And he's very, very, you know, gave it a lot of attention. He didn't care whether he lost that money, and he only got a flower. You know, he was not greedy. He wasn't going to give up the principles of Krishna consciousness. So, you know, both are there. For a devotee to be self-satisfied with the bare necessities is therefore the best advice for spiritual advancement. Learned authorities in devotional life consequently advise that one not endeavour to increase the number of temples and mutts. Such activities can be undertaken only by devotees experienced in propagating Krishna consciousness movements. All acharyas in South India, especially Sri Ramanujacharya, constructed many big temples, and in North India, all the Goswamis of Vrindavan constructed large temples. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur also constructed large centres known as Gaudiya Mathas. Therefore, temple construction is not bad, provided proper care is taken for the propagation of Krishna consciousness. Even if such endeavours are considered greedy, the greed is to satisfy Krishna, and therefore these are spiritual activities. So once again, we're talking about greed in its negative connotation, and then we're also getting a positive way of looking at it. And we heard in previous purports that, you know, the spreading of the Krishna, the Sankirtan movement is more, through book distribution and the chanting of the holy name and distribution of prasad, is more important than opening temples. So we read that in previous verses. And here again, you know, there is a danger. We're talking about greed, even in devotees, and that can manifest even in the way they want to open temples, which, you know, you know, may certainly have aspects of spreading Krishna consciousness, but there may also be a huge, big endeavour to satisfy greed, you know, and, you know, for facility, greed for facility, greed for prestige and position and so many things like that. So, you know, there is a definite danger there. Now, then Prabhupada gives examples. Now, he says such activities can be taken only by devotees experienced in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement. So who are the examples he gives? Ramanujacharya, etc. You know, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. You know, who are they're propagating a movement, you know, like that. So certainly persons not to be taken lightly. He's given some, you know, highly elevated persons, the most elevated persons in Krishna consciousness, you know. So we have, you know, otherwise even as devotees, you know, if we're not on that list of names, we have to be careful in, you know, such things. And ISKCON, has to be mindful if these things are in Prabhupada's books. You know, and we you know, we've had temples stolen off, you know, off from ISKCON, right? The temple, you know, it was there's one in India where it was part of ISKCON and then it became part of the Ritviks.
Bangalore.
Yeah. It was almost like an act against the propagation of the establishment of the International Society of Krishna Consciousness Movement, or in, you know, a very harmful act, really, you know, to take someone's temple. Why not just get your own, sort of thing, you know? So, There can be motivations, you know. There can be motivations in the reasons why people, you know, want a big temple. We have to be careful of that. But just see how far now, and this is, you know, sometimes devotees become really surprised when, you know, within ISKCON we have devotees and sometimes even very senior devotees, and we see anomalies in their behavior. But, you know, I find it, you know, fascinating that we're surprised, because we're inviting, you know, people off the streets. You know, every one of us, you know, coming from conditioned souls generally, you know, we're full of lust and greed and anger. And if that's not purified by a, you know, proper approach to devotional service and association, which actually, you know, helps to smooth out those rough edges and really purify the heart, if it's allowed to just, you know, it's there, it's already there when they come to the movement. But if we allow it to just flourish in a person, you know, with unchecked, then we can't be surprised at all. Oh, you know, here's this person, you know, who's holding high position, and we see that they're following this greed and, you know, this and that, and, you know, ambitions. Why should we be surprised? It's been there from the very beginning. No one's checked it. Maybe devotees have pointed it out and no one's listening. And then all of a sudden, oh, we got so much trouble. You know, we should almost expect it, unless we're vigilant. Because it's saying here in these books, we're talking about devotees. Here is Srimad Bhagavatam. We're not pointing the finger. It's not that the Karmis are establishing Krishna consciousness temples. You know, they all wanted to say, you know, they want to, you know, open up places of profit. We're the ones who want to establish temples of Krishna. We're the ones who may be subject to opening them, because there's a huge element of greed and ambition, you know, within us. You know, these instructions are for us. And, you know, this movement goes for 10,000 years. How many times do you think this will play out in the International Society of Krishna Consciousness over the next 10,000 years? Where people will, you know, where temples will be, established, run, overrun, overtaken by persons who somehow have been in ISKCON long enough to get hold of, a temple and basically fulfill all their, you know, particular materialistic desires. How many times do you think that will play out? Do you think that will never happen? Hands up. Hands up those who think that will never happen. There we go. Not one hand in the class. And there's 100 people in this class. So, you know, it's very, very interesting. That hand went up for... No, this is a question.
Now, because this the temple thing has come up.
What's that?
I thought it's an appropriate thing to talk about now. There is a talk, or you can say a rumor in a sense, that there is another temple, you know, they're planning on the relatively higher management people, persons linked to the management. They are planning for another temple somewhere in the western suburb and things like that.
Oh, okay.
So, what is your opinion?
I'm not in higher management. I'm not in lower management. I'm basically the servant of management. So I don't hear about these things too much. So I don't really know anything about it. But all I can say is that I hope that, you know, they read these chapters that all those in management read these. Sections of the Bhagavatam and understand, you know, we do have dangers in our movement. As long as the devotees are well versed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and they're implementing, these warnings of the Bhagavatam, then there's not a problem. You know, we only have a problem if we neglect the Bhagavatam. Then there's a problem, isn't there? If we pay no attention to the Bhagavatam and to what Prabhupada is saying here, we can expect. That's what I'm saying. Don't be surprised, all of a sudden there's all these problems. And then someone says, oh, how did that happen? In ISKCON, huh? You know. Oh, did you ever read that part of the Bhagavatam that addresses that issue? No, I never got to that. No. I read it, but didn't really, you know, I thought we'd talk about karmis. You know, within the history of ISKCON, within the history of the Gaudiya Math, within the history, even in the past times of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all of these positive and negative things played out. Everything that you see in the Bhagavatam, the do's and the don'ts, the warnings, when we get to the, you know, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, you'll see that all of these things played out in the pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and in the pastimes of the Acharyas, from Ramanujacharya to, you know, Guru Kishore Das Babaji, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and in this movement. And they will repeat again and again over 10,000 years. This is spoken, the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, this is knowledge that exists within the universe, perpetually for those who are able to, you know, take advice from the top level, because these things exist within our universe forever. You know, wherever there's a religious movement, wherever there is a spiritual movement, wherever there are religious principles, you can understand that there will be the attacks of irreligion, which we mentioned there were five principal ones, and that there is the essential goal of God consciousness, attachment to God consciousness, to the degree that that is lost, these things will increase. And that to the degree that the goal of attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and helping others to develop that attachment is there, these problems will not exist. They're a permanent feature. When Krishna consciousness is there, then certain things are overshadowed. And as soon as the goal of Krishna consciousness is not there, you can guarantee all of these things which are mentioned in the Bhagavatam will immediately manifest. So, but that's, you know, that is a constant. Therefore, there is a constant endeavor by the devotees to maintain their own individual Krishna consciousness and the Krishna consciousness of the entire math, community, temple, zone. And when, you know, and especially the leaders, Prabhupada would always point out, especially the leaders, if they slacken in their Krishna consciousness, then you can expect that, you know, the material energy will enter in these different ways that are mentioned in the Bhagavatam. It's a natural consequence. It's not an unusual, it's a given. It must happen. And, you know, now, when Prabhupada, again, when he was in New York and he was speaking to devotees, and, you know, one devotee said, Prabhupada was talking about, not being victimized by the material energy and by Maya. And one disciple said, Prabhupada, you know, last night my window was smashed. And, was that Maya? Was that an attack of Maya? And Prabhupada, you know, had a little giggle. He says, Maya's within your window, out of your window. He says, why are you compact Maya just within your window? He says, this whole material existence is Maya. You know, as if, I think Maya was here at my window. Prabhupada's, Maya is the whole material existence. She's not just here. She's everywhere at all times. And he said, and Maya is always attacking. And the only time, the only place where Maya is not present is where the chanting of the holy names is going on nicely. And chanting means preaching. The more the preaching is, the more the chanting is. Very, very, nice, high pitch. And as otherwise, if the chanting slackens, then immediately Maya will attack. So, Maya attack means that as soon as the preaching slackens, the Krishna consciousness slackens, immediately these things we're reading in the Bhagavatam will be manifest. And that's just the way it is. It could happen. No, it will definitely happen. So, therefore, in opening temples, it is always done, following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada and bearing in mind, as we've said, Prabhupada considered pushing on the Sankirtan movement to be most important. We certainly don't want to do anything that in any way decreases pushing on the Sankirtan movement through book distribution or, the holy name and prasadam distribution. If temple opening temples increases that, or the good quality, then that's good. Certainly you don't want a significant reduction in that. And we don't want to open temples just for someone's ego either. There has to be, our goal is that we definitely feel, that, if we're opening a temple, it will very much enhance the Sankirtan movement of book distribution, Shadam distribution, chanting the holy names here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it will vastly enhance people's attachment to Krishna. We don't want to be them to be attached to a temple for the sake of attached to it and not attached to Krishna. We're not trying to attach people to a temple. We're trying to attach people to the personality of Godhead. There may be different reasons why you would want to attach people to a temple, one temple and not another. But that's not our goal. Our goal is to actually, it must be to attach people to Krishna. What is that plan and how does that work? So these are the things we have to look at. And certainly the other thing we certainly have to look at is, it should never be an impediment to the Sankirtan or to people's attachment to Krishna coming in the line of Srila Prabhupada, very strictly in the line of Prabhupada. We don't want to open a temple and then people start following something slightly different to Prabhupada. So, these things all have to be looked at. But, text number 22. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires. Oh, this is very interesting, this section, because, comments? No?
No, the section you're doing is coming up.
Oh, yes. So it's a very good section. It sort of it gives a lot of remedies, for things that we face in our daily battle with the mind and senses. By making plans with determination, one should give up lusty desires for sense gratification. Similarly, by giving up envy, one should conquer anger. By discussing the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, one should give up greed. And by discussing the truth, one should give up fear. So, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura has suggested how one can conquer lusty desires for sense gratification. One cannot give up thinking of women, for thinking in this way is natural. Even while walking on the street, one will see so many women. So, this is the beauty of Srila Prabhupada's. Immediately you read these purports, he just You know, everything is very natural, you know, and it's not about repression of natural things, but, you know, certainly how to deal with, you know, our natural situation in this material world, trying to be advancing Krishna consciousness, but, you know, in a way in which we conquer over the senses. He says, however, if one is determined not to live with a woman, even while seeing a woman, he will not be lusty. If one is determined not to have sex, he can automatically conquer lusty desires. The example given in this regard is that even if one is hungry, if on a particular day he is determined to observe fasting, he can naturally conquer the disturbances of hunger and thirst. If one is determined not to be... we'll come back to this. We'll come back to that purport there, but... you know, sometimes as a brahmachari, you know, going out on sankirtan, you know, being in the brahmachari ashram, so Kriyas is also brahmachari, but in the brahmachari ashram, going out on sankirtan, and of course, you know, my first couple of years as a devotee, so basically I've come from being a hippie on the street, you know, going to parties every weekend, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a no associate, you're not allowed to, you know, look at women. You know, it's very, it's a big contrast. But, you know, this here, it sort of worked. One of the things I used to do was, you know, when I'd see women in these really, you know, fashion clothes, you know, so they'd be quite, you know, alluring, what have you. But I used to think to myself, who's that poor man who's paying for all that? Because, you know, no, seriously... I mean, the women, not the Hare Krishna women, but the money that they would have to spend, some of the shoes, right? I'm not looking your way for a particular reason, but they're thousands of dollars, just a pair of shoes. And sometimes they just wear them to one or two occasions, you know. You know, the handbag. And I used to think to myself, I could never afford, you know, the amount of work that I would have to do, you know, to, if that woman lived in my house and I was sort of responsible for her keeping up with her fashion. What just then? There's the education of the children. That hasn't even come into yet. We're just first just trying to keep up with the fashions. I'd never be able to keep up with them in this life, you know. And I knew I'd never. That's it. I wouldn't be reading the Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, or anything. It's out the window. It'd be like, you know, I'd come home from work, my wife would tip me upside down, shake out all the money. That's not enough. I need another handbag. The ladies are not even listening to this part of the Bhagavatam. So what do you think of that? They're on another planet. What do you think of that? Do you do that when you see men with, you know, hope, and you think, oh, thank God my husband's not that? Yes. So we're all in perfect agreement with that one. So we'll move on. If one is determined not to be envious of anyone, he can naturally conquer anger. Similarly, and of course, again, you know, when you look at anger, it does come down to that, you know, that envy means I can't stand the thought that that person, you know, that I hate so much is going to enjoy, you know, such facility and, you know, this and that and the other like that. You know, that's envy like that. So, but actually when that envy is not there, it's hard to maintain anger. You know, you sort of, you know, when you think that, you know, you don't want to see any living entity. You don't want to see any person suffer, even if they've done wrong to us. You know, we don't want to see anyone, you know, suffer and, you know, their whole life sort of ruined or going without, you know. But when that anger is, when the envy is not there, it's hard to actually maintain anger, you know. Yeah. So, similarly, one can give up the desire to accumulate wealth simply by considering how difficult it is to protect the money in one's possession. So that's similar. If one keeps a large amount of cash with him, he is always anxious about keeping it properly. Thus, if one discusses the disadvantages of accumulating wealth, he can naturally give up business without difficulty. And again, you know, going on sankirtan, I used to just, you know, walk the streets. I could go, I went everywhere in Australia, everywhere in New Zealand, door to door, you know, to the rich, the poor. And I was free to walk around and never fearful like that. But the houses I was going to, they had, you know, because they had wealth, they couldn't do what I was doing. They had, you know, dogs, gates, spikes, security. Some had, you know, guards. They were fearful within their own home, despite all that security, and they couldn't walk down the street or anything like that. So, and I used to think to myself, you know, what a high price, you know. And then, you know, again, the amount of work and money they had to invest to protect the money was probably more money than I'd ever have in my whole life anyway. So, yeah. Anyway, by discussing spiritual knowledge, one can conquer lamentation and illusion. By serving a great devotee, one can become prideless. And what happens if we don't serve a great devotee? We can't become prideless. We remain proud. By keeping silent, one can avoid obstacles on the path of mystic yoga. And simply by stopping sense gratification, one can conquer envy. Ah, there we go, giving up envy. Of course, you know, if you look at someone, you know, and we're angry at them, and then there's envy, but if you think, well, there's nothing there that I want anyway, you know, so we got two devotees, you know, maybe a couple of the ladies, there's a position up, you know, for grabs. One of them gets the position, the other one doesn't. But, you know, one of them is thinking, well, you know, there's nothing in having position that I'm attracted to, you know. There's no value to my devotional service. There's no increase in the quality of the service or anything, you know. In fact, you know, there may be a whole lot of different problems associated with that, trying to maintain that position, because then you've got to deal with all the other envious people who want that position like that. So, you know, if there's nothing to enjoy, then it's very easy to give up envy. You know, I've always, you know, thought about that with regards to, you know, position, that, you know... And I do follow some very senior devotees who have a similar mood in ISKCON, is that they're a little wary of taking positions even though they're offered to them, or sometimes they take them, you know, reluctantly, because, you know, the joy of just being a preacher and, you know, just... being in a position where it's easier to maintain maybe a humble profile and what have you, you know, is a much more, you know, wonderful life, you know, as a devotee. So and I've heard very, very senior devotees, you know, very senior devotees at the topmost level say that, you know, I don't want to accept position because you just end up with so many enemies in ISKCON, you know, and things like that, you know. So, as we can see that, you know, by, you know, this, we can give up all these different things, you know, there are different... adjustments in our consciousness, which really just override. So, you know, if our mind's running on a program of lust or envy or what have you, sometimes it's just a little thought process, and once you're on that thought process, it just overrides it. You know, and these are those thought processes. They're a little key to just, okay, let's get on a different channel. You know, you're on television, you just flick it, you're on channel 9, you go, no, let's go to channel 7, and it just switches. So, there's something more palatable. So then, by good behavior and freedom from envy, one should counteract sufferings due to other living entities. So this, you know, this freedom from envy has come up a few times, actually, has, been very helpful in many regards. By meditation in trance, one should counteract sufferings due to providence, and by practicing hatha yoga, pranayama, and so forth, one should counteract suffering due to the body and mind. Similarly, by developing the mode of goodness, especially in regard to eating, one should conquer sleep. So, you know, that's a very simple formula, isn't it? You know, being very sattvic, not eating too much, too little, and, you know, regular times, proper times, you know, with full knowledge of how the food's going to affect you, you conquer oversleep. Such a simple formula, and the amount of devotees, you know, who after many, many years still have struggling with sleep, and don't apply that, you know. It's so simple. It works really well. One must conquer the modes of passion and ignorance by developing the mode of goodness, and then one must become detached from the mode of goodness by promoting oneself to the platform of Sudha-sattva. So as we see, the lower thing is conquered by coming to the slightly higher level of consciousness, or by our attachment to something inferior is conquered by attaching to something superior. All this can be automatically done if one engages in the service of the spiritual master with faith and devotion. In this way, one can conquer the influence of the modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada describes in the purport, just by treating the root cause of an ailment, one can conquer all bodily pains and sufferings. Similarly, if one is devoted and faithful to the spiritual master, he can conquer the influence of sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna very easy. And of course, when we're talking about envy and anger, that's tamaguna, lust and greed, that's rajaguna, even sattva-guna, all these things. So this is the main remedy. How? The bhakta immediately attains the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the spiritual master. And by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, one immediately becomes transcendental, conquering all the influences of sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna within this material world. If one is a pure devotee acting under the directions of the Guru, one easily gets the mercy of the Supreme Lord and thus becomes immediately situated on the transcendental platform. And of course, Prabhupada says that we may not be pure devotees, but if we follow the instructions of the pure devotees, we are as good as a pure devotee. So, meaning that, you know, we're not trying to be pure. Mean here, Prabhupada saying one's, you know, one is a pure devotee acting under the directions of gurus. We might think, well, I can't do that. I'm not a pure devotee. But Prabhupada is assuring us, yes, you can, because if you follow the instructions, you are as good as a pure devotee. You know, you're situated there. The spiritual master should be considered to be directly the Supreme Lord because he gives transcendental knowledge for enlightenment. Consequently, for one who maintains the material conception that the spiritual master is an ordinary human being, everything is frustrated. His enlightenment and his Vedic knowledge, studies and knowledge are like the bathing of an elephant. So sometimes we see that Prabhupada, when he was in India with his disciples, some of them used to go to visit some of the relatives of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhakti, you know, like that. And in the beginning, they were getting information which was good for the autobiography of, you know, both Prabhupada, understanding Prabhupada's association with Bhakti Siddhanta, and also, you know, understanding Bhakti Siddhanta, understanding the acharyas. Then some of the information they were getting back was where the relatives were seeing, you know, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, etc., in a mundane way. And then Prabhupada stopped them from going to see them. See? And these things are explained here, that that is forbidden. Just because, very dangerous, and just because they may see them in a mundane way, doesn't mean it's acceptable. You know, it's not acceptable, in fact. Very dangerous. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the master of all other living entities and of the material nature. His lotus feet are sought and worshipped by great saintly persons like Vyas. Nonetheless, there are fools who consider Lord Krishna an ordinary human being. And so this is a good example. He's the supreme spiritual master, and even they're accepting him as an ordinary. But the spiritual master is called Sevaka Bhagavan, the servitor personality of Godhead, and Krishna is called Sevya Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead who is to be worshipped. So sometimes Narada Muni is also called Bhagavan. You know, that means he is Sevaka Bhagavan. The spiritual master is the worshipper God, whereas the supreme personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the worshipable God. This is the difference between the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead. Another point, Bhagavad Gita, which constitutes the instructions of Krishna, is presented by the spiritual master as it is without deviation. Therefore, the absolute truth is present in the spiritual master. The supreme personality of Godhead gives real knowledge to the entire world, and the spiritual master, as a representative, carries the message throughout the world. Therefore, on the absolute platform, there is no difference between the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, one who is very serious about spiritual advancement must regard the spiritual master in this way. Even a slight deviation from this understanding can create disaster in the disciples' Vedic studies and austerities. So we'll leave it there. Let's just do this last one because it quotes that important bit. Ritualistic ceremonies, regulative principles, austerities and the practice of yoga are all meant to control the senses and mind. But even after one is able to control the senses and mind, if he does not come to the point of meditation upon the Supreme Lord, all such activities are simply labour in frustration. So then Srila Prabhupada quotes this verse, that by staunch faith in the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead, one not only controls the senses but also realizes the supreme Lord. Yasha deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tashaite kadita yata pakashante mahatmanaha. Only unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. Also, simply by rendering service to the spiritual master, one crosses the ocean of nescience and returns home back to Godhead. Thus, he gradually sees the Supreme Lord face to face and enjoys life in association with the Lord. The ultimate goal of yoga is to come in contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unless this point is achieved, one's so-called yoga practice is simply labour without benefit. So there we see that how in the earlier part of ISKCON, that mood, you know, the devotees, even I joined after Prabhupada left, but we were Prabhupada conscious. You know, we understood that by Prabhupada consciousness, we would also be Krishna conscious. But we were sort of Prabhupada conscious first, then Krishna conscious after. Now, we have to teach people, you also have to be Prabhupada conscious. It's almost like it's not there at all sometimes. But in following that, this section of the Bhagavatam saying if you serve the spiritual master who's a representative of Krishna, all these different pitfalls, lust, greed, anger, you know, envy, all of those, you'll be free from them. If you just follow his instruction by that one thing alone, so the spiritual master says, you know, you preach, try and spread this Krishna consciousness movement. You know, always think of Krishna. You know, you chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles. You do that. And, you know, especially book distribution, prasadam distribution, Harinam Kirtan, as much as you can. Distribute that. Don't sort of hang around the temple, you know, too much unnecessary. You know, preach like that. You do that. You give your whole mind, intelligence and body to that. Then the Moses disappear. All at once. You know, it's not as if, oh, I've got this envy, you know, and there's a little, you know, I've got... You don't have to... You can see those things, but they just disappear as you're doing your service. It's not that we, you know, hang around the temple, you know, having all sorts of discussion hour and hour after hour after hour after hour. How will I would deal with this envy that I've got, you know? We can discuss that for hours. Oh, you know... You know, I'm having trouble controlling the mind and, you know, the senses. We can discuss that for hours and hours, days and months. Or, hey, Prabhu, come out with me on Harinam every day this week because we're going out and see how you feel at the end of the week. And you know what will happen? At the end of the week, they say, my mind and senses are just really peaceful. You know, this that was our process in those days. You know, not, let's sit around and discuss for hours and hours. And my mind tells me to do this. And my mind tells me to do that. Yes. You know, come out, you know, have some prasadam. See how you feel after that, you know. Come and listen to this nice devotee. So, you know, these are some of the differences I notice. You know, there's a lot more, people exercising their, educational skills. You know, people have been through university and, you know, they've got, and they're in the corporate structure and they've got all these, this is how we deal with, you know, these things in the corporate and how we deal with these things here. And they discuss these things, you know, back and forth. In our day, it's like, yes, I really feel for you, Prabhu, you're having difficulty in your mind. I'm just about to go on and Sankirtan. Would you like to come with me for a bit? And, you know, perhaps if we get a chance, we'll have... And you just chant all day and have some prasad and you come back. I have no more troubles. You know, it actually works, very powerful. So, very interesting section. All right then, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Thank you, Sean. Bhagavatananda ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Granth Raja ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.